Hello, everyone. Happy Sunday evening. Of course, as you all know, this is a Sunday evening when many, many people will be watching the Super Bowl instead of coming into the room. I went out today to run a few errands. Actually, I can't drive right now. I'm in Lynn's boat. Lynn can't drive, I can't drive. And so today I had my boyfriend here, and he was willing to take me to run errands, so I took advantage of it. Everywhere I went, orange and blue. You know, everybody here is definitely thinking about the Super Bowl, just orange and blue everywhere. So, and also, we wanted to go out to eat, and the first three restaurants that we went to were closed for the Super Bowl. So we finally decided a sports bar would probably be open, and we could eat there, and sure enough, it was. We went to a sports bar. But for those of you who felt to be here, thank you for coming. Dove is saying, doesn't look like Denver's night so far. Okay, well, it's early though, isn't it? You know what I would like to do? I'd like to have a moment of stillness. So why don't we do that? Amen. Tonight we're going to be looking at an oldie, but a goodie. We're going to be looking at the code. Some of you have been through the code a number of times, so you'll be familiar with this. What I'm going to do is give you a link. This is a link to a PDF file. And I see Kathy just came in the room, so let me post that link again for Kathy. A link to a PDF file. This is the code. Not exactly sure why we're looking at it again. I have no particular reason except that that's just what was burning in me. I don't know who started the fire, but somebody did somewhere. So we're going to look at it. Before we do, I would like to take a moment to say a little something about absolute and relative truth. The code, which we're going to look at, is relative truth. The code is also in a different way. It shows up in NTI. It's the same as the book of Ephesians. And the first time I came across this teaching was in NTI, the Ephesians. That happened before the code. And when Ephesians came, I knew that I was being shown how illusion is made. Or we could say how temporary manifestation, temporary experience is made. I wasn't being taught absolute truth. And at that time, I would say I wasn't ready for absolute truth. Even when the code came, I wasn't ready for absolute truth. Because I was still too mired in suffering. And it seems like what I needed to do, and I'm not the only one that does it this way, although there's the exact opposite way also works. I'll talk about the exact opposite way in a moment. But what I needed to do was find my way out of suffering first. Find my way to relative peace. And then from relative peace, the absolute began to dawn on me. Now, the reason I say the opposite works, too, is some people go all the way down into the suffering, and they're, you know, like Eckhart Tolle was just about to kill himself when when the Absolute dawned on him. So there's not one way, right? There's just not one way. But definitely for some of us, going through some kind of a process of purification, some kind of a process of learning, some kind of a process of gaining clarity, all of that seems to happen first. And in fact, that seems to be the path that is described in A Course in Miracles and in NTI. So that is what happened with me, and that is probably what's happening with many of you, since you seem to also be on those paths, A Course in Miracles and NTI. So what that really means is we're on a path of first learning and mastering relative truth. And it's a truth that, although it is extremely helpful for a time, at some point we're going to let go of it too. It's not the final resting place. So the code, which we're going to look at tonight, is relative truth. It is not absolute truth. But that's what we're looking at tonight. A few more people have entered the room, so I will give the link again to the PDF. And I guess what I'll do is I will just start by reading. This was a message that came September 30th, 2007, during my relationship with Laurent. There had been a message on the previous day where there was some kind of a reference to the code. And at that time, I used to have great clarity while scribing, while listening to the Holy Spirit. But when the scribing stopped and a little bit of time passed, I could go back into great confusion, and I couldn't recall or remember or get a grasp on what had been so clear just a little bit ago. So even though with that little reference, the code, when it came, I probably understood it perfectly. Later, I didn't. There was a fuzziness around it, a huge fuzziness, actually. And so I asked about it. What would you share with us today to help us reach greater clarity on the code mentioned in yesterday's message? And here is the answer that came. The code is ideas, just as all things within illusion are ideas. The code can be seen as specific manifestations in form, can be felt as feelings, or can be heard as thoughts. The best way to look at the code is as the potential driver of experience. I say it is the potential driver of experience because code will only drive your experience if you fully believe the code. Even if you let go of your belief in the code partially, it no longer has full influence over you. The code can only drive your experience to the degree that you believe the code. Before I go any further, Lynn, L-I-N, Lynn, I know that you're the admin. I'm going to go ahead and I'm sure you probably can see the link, but I'm going to post the link one more time. If you notice people popping in the room during the teaching, if you want to repost the link for them, that would be great, because once I get going, I'm not going to notice people popping in anymore. I'll be too focused on the teaching. Thank you. All right, so going back to the message then. One thing that's interesting, first of all, is we want to look at this definition of the code. The code is specific manifestations in form. So this table that my PC is on is the code. The PC is the code. Actually, I think it's a Mac. I hope I didn't offend it by calling it a PC. This body, you know, like I touch this body, this is the code. Just any specific manifestation in form is a part of the code. But also anything that can be felt as a feeling. Anything that can be felt as a feeling is a part of the code. And any thought that can be heard is a part of the code. So there's really no difference between what we would call an outside manifestation, the physical body, a feeling, and a thought. They're all a part of the code. And then this says that the best way to look at the code is as a potential driver of experience. And we're told that the reason it's called a potential driver of experience is because we only experience the code if we believe in it, if we fully believe in it. And you know, that goes both ways. If I fully believe a thought that I'm being treated unfairly, I'm going to experience being treated unfairly. If I fully believe the thought, all is well, I'm going to experience all is well. So the code works both ways. You could say there is both wrong-minded code and right-minded code, but they are both code. And I am going to experience based on what I'm believing. So it's a potential driver of experience because I may have many, many stimuli from the code. And it's really the stimuli that I give my attention to, the stimuli that I choose to give my attention to, that is going to generate my experience. So there could be a quick thought, I'm being treated unfairly, and then there could be a quick thought right after it, all is well. The one that I choose to believe is the one that's going to be the cause of my experience. I will either feel treated unfairly or I will feel like, you know what, this is okay, just the way it's happening, based on what part of the code I chose to believe. So the code is full of potentialities. And in fact, in any given moment, there are no potentialities outside of the code. So every bit of experience that you could choose from is already, you could say, coded. And that's why, like A Course in Miracles talks about the script. Hindu teachings often talk about karma. The teachings of Inner Ramana talked about both the script and karma. These things would be the same as the code. So again, the code only drives our experience to the degree that we believe it. And even if we partially don't believe something, then our experience will be different. If I fully believe I'm treated unfairly, and if I kind of believe I'm treated unfairly, but a part of me is saying maybe not, I'm going to have two different experiences, right? Two different experiences based on which potentiality I choose. All right, let's look at the second paragraph of this message. The code comes from you. All of you as you perceive yourself now, but that is you. The code that most directly influences you in the experience as an individual is the code that most directly comes from you. But all code influences upon each other so that no true separation in code can be determined. It is really important to accept that there is no separation. And this is always true and always reflected within the code. So, you know, lots of times when people read teachings like A Course in Miracles, for example, and Jesus is talking to you about your thoughts and your projections, because we still perceive ourselves as an individual, you know, there's a little confusion that enters the mind that it's the individual's projection. The world is the individual's projection. Also, another confusion that enters the mind is that somehow I'm guilty for my thoughts because I'm responsible for my thoughts. And if that kind of a thought shows up in my mind and I'm responsible for it, I must be bad. You know, I should only have good thoughts. What this is saying is that you can't really pin responsibility on the individual in that way. Because the truth is, the individual is a manifestation and part of the code. You know, it's like trying to blame a character in a movie for something that the writer wrote in the script. You know, it just, you can't really look at it that way. That is what the Course would call level confusion. You know, if we're here in this experience where there seems to be many of us, the many of us are the one dreamer of the dream, using the language of the Course, not the individual. And so the code comes from the whole, which means literally the thoughts that appear to come into Regina Dawn Acres' mind come from all of us. And the thoughts that appear to show up in your mind come from all of us. You know, there's a writing of the code that's happening, and then there's an experiencing of the code that's happening. But the writing of the code comes from the whole. I'm going to the third paragraph. The code makes illusion. As long as you experience any degree of illusion, you experience the code. As you always experience the totality of the code, although the code can be experienced differently. This is because the code is a layered code, and the layers are different vibrational levels of the same basic code. Add to that the phenomenon of an individual scripted interpretation, and the code seems to have a myriad of different angles, but it is all one code. So often when people hear about the script, of course, they imagine this, you know, linear script. But what this is saying is that, you know, this is very, very, very complex, the way this code is written, this script is written. And each one of us experiences the code differently for two basic reasons. One, a part of the code is an individual interpretation. So the way that I and the way that Lynn Johnson see the exact same circumstance can be completely different, because there's an individual interpretation as a part of the code of that character and an individual interpretation as a part of the code of this character, and that's going to color how we see. But another thing that also colors how we see is what is being called here a vibrational level. And this, of course, is a symbol, but it's a very, very useful symbol. It really means, it really is dependent on how strong we are attracted to the wrong mind, or how strong we are attracted to the right mind. If I still have, at a vibrational level, where I have a very, very strong attraction to the wrong mind, I'm going to experience the entire code much, much more through that wrong mind. But if I have gone through some kind of a purification process, some kind of an awakening process, where really my attraction to the wrong mind has been reduced, and I'm much more attracted to the right mind, I'm going to experience the exact same code in a completely different way. So even though the code is there, it comes from the whole, it's the same code for all of us, that's why we all see Pike's Peak in the exact same place. You know, we can all look at a pillow and say that's a pillow, because in that way it's the exact same code for all of us. It also can be seen in very, very individual ways. All right, so going back to the message, beginning with, I'm going to have to quit counting paragraphs in a minute, but I think it's like the fourth paragraph within the answer. Individual scripted interpretation also comes from the code. This facet of the code comes into the mind as your thoughts, your feelings, and your reactions. It is an interpretation of shared events, and your reaction or belief about individual interpreted code adds to the overall writing of total code and total experience. So again, Lynn Johnson and I, you know, have two different interpretations of the same event, right? Lynn Johnson's interpretation is a part of the code. That's a part of the script. Regina Dawn Acres' interpretation is a part of the code. It's a part of the script. But the code within itself has potentials written within it. So there may be a wrong-minded perception available. There may also be a perception that is more right-minded available, for example. And based on our attraction, and we'll talk in a moment how attraction happens, because to a point that comes from the code as well, but based on our attraction to the wrong mind or the right mind, we are going to make a choice to believe something within the code, make a choice to give our attention to something within the code. And whatever we choose to believe goes out into the next nanosecond of code writing. So let's imagine that both Lynn and I, for some reason, are attracted to the wrong-minded perception of an event, and we both choose the wrong-minded code option. Then what happens is more wrong-minded energy or more lower vibration energy goes into the writing of the code. And so this really explains why the world is the projection of our mind or the reflection of our mind. Again, not so much on the individual level as on the level of the totality. And it shows how when we're picking wrong-minded vibrations, it adds to a wrong-minded reflection or projection as a whole. If we're picking right-minded vibrations, though, you know, that gets written in a little bit differently. So what appears to be our personal choices actually affects the whole. So continuing with the message. With that said, here is your only responsibility as long as you seem to be in a body within a world. Your influence on the total comes from your interpretation of the code, which you then relive as individual interpreted code, or you choose not to relive through recognition of your creative ability. At some level, you must recognize your power to change the code, or you remain trapped within the belief and the acceptance of the code as real. The only way to be released from the code as you write it is to recognize your freedom and choose to write different code. Now again, this isn't talking about a very specific idea. You know, like I can see that, you know, Jasmine is making certain choices for her life. I don't want Jasmine to make certain choices for her life. So in my mind, I'm going to focus on her making different choices and she will do that. This is not conscious at all. That whole conscious mind is the code. That whole conscious mind that would try and generate a particular miracle is the code. That's why Jesus tells us in the beginning of A Course in Miracles that that if we're trying to choose the miracles, they could be severely misguided, and that really all miracles should be under Christ control. It's not our job to be trying to control the way the world looks, make the picture a certain way with our mind, because chances are we're actually coming from the wrong mind when we do that. We're wishing that things were different, and we're trying to make them different. So you know what we're doing? We're choosing a wrong-minded perception, and we're actually adding more of that wrong-minded vibration to the code itself. So that's why Jesus calls it severely misguided. It's severely misguided. Our job is simply to have an inner pause that we learn to take, an inner pause, and to always try and choose the most right-minded option that appears to be available to me in the moment. Now, what's really interesting about this is that as we somehow rise in vibration through choosing right-minded choices, we're going to find right-minded choices that are more and more right-minded. That's, you know, our attraction to the right mind begins to change as we choose right-minded choices. So let's imagine that I'm a low vibration person, which means the vast majority of the choices that come into my mind that I see every day are really, really wrong-minded choices. Highly judgmental choices. I'm judging myself. I'm judging others. And let's say that, the best thought that comes into my mind is, just have compassion for yourself. Just have compassion for yourself. You can't help it that you judge so much, right? If I choose that choice just to have compassion for myself, I can't help it that I judge so much. I'm going to send a better vibration out into the code, and I'm going to begin to rise myself in vibrational level. Which means the more I choose that choice to just have compassion for myself, I can't help it, at some point I'm actually going to see a higher option in the mind, a more right-minded option. For example, I may begin to see that I don't actually have to even believe the judgments, where at first that may not appear available. The judgments may just seem to be believed, right? So each one of us then, our individual responsibility, no matter where we are at, no matter where we are at, and no matter what options appear to be available to us, our individual responsibility, if we want to be truly helpful, is to choose what we perceive as our best option available to me now. Now, one mistake that a lot of people make is judging themselves that their best option wasn't good enough. They had this option of just have compassion for yourself, and then they hear somebody else in Pal Talk talking about, I realize I didn't have to believe that thought, and I just let it go. And, they've never experienced yet not believing a thought. The believing just happens. And so then they, they get down on themselves for not being able to choose not to believe a thought. But as soon as they're getting back down on themselves, they're pulling in more of that lower vibration again. So instead of getting down on themselves, the highest choice would just be have compassion that you don't seem to be able to do that yet. Have compassion, right? So it's a matter of learning to really pay attention within myself with a true desire to be most helpful to the entire world, or a true desire to awaken. Either one of those desires will work. Or a true desire to be only love. Any of these desires will work. But with a true desire that is pointing in that direction, be very, very careful, very slow, very pausing within myself, always asking for, what is my best option now? And choosing that best option as consistently as possible. That is the most helpful thing that any of us can do. So again, your influence on the total comes from your interpretation of the code, which you then relive as individual interpreted code, or you choose not to relive it, through recognition of your creative ability. Your creative ability is talking about is just choosing your highest perception, choosing your highest vibration. At some level, you must recognize your power to change the code, or you remain trapped within the belief and the acceptance of the code as real. The only way to be released from the code as you write it is to recognize your freedom and choose to write a different code. Again, not specifically, because that can be severely misguided, but just choosing our highest perception available to me now. In its most basic element, in its most basic element, individual interpreted code comes into the mind as a thought, feeling, or reaction to the overall illusory code. It is a part of the total, but it is a part that makes the total, so it is as significant as the overall code. One thing we talk a lot about on this spiritual path is, seeing our thoughts and choosing our thoughts. And, every now and then I will run across someone who just says, I just disagree with that. It's not my thoughts. My thoughts are not the problem. You know, I'll just wake up and suddenly the world is darker. There was no thought that made it darker. It just was darker. And, you know, the thoughts then come later. But this heavy, depressive feeling was there first. Or this crazy, fearful feeling was there first. Well, believe it or not, that's semantics. That's semantics. We are defining a thought and feeling as being something different. And what this message is telling us is it's all code. You know, that's just not a word that we use, but a thought, a feeling is the same. So whether I seem to have a thought like, oh, I'm being treated unfairly, and then I experience it, or whether I seem to just wake up in the morning with this heavy, heavy feeling, and then thoughts start coming about that heavy, heavy feeling, regardless of which comes first, the feeling, then the thoughts, or the thought, then the feeling, it's actually the same thing. They're both just code, individually written into the script. Which means, overall, our response is exactly the same. If I see thoughts, then I can start looking for the highest thought that I can choose out of those thoughts. If I wake up with this heavy, heavy depression or this, you know, just this anxiety going on, then choosing how to be with that is my highest choice. It's really no different. It's just semantics. It only sounds different. We either go down with it or we find the little open window, the little crack that's there, and we choose the crack, right? And we choose the fresh air, whatever the fresh air is for us. You know, Peace Pilgrim said that whenever she chose the highest light that was available to her, then higher and higher light or more light was given. And that's really what this is talking about. It's that same thing. It's really just talking about doing your best in the moment. But what I have found and what I think many, many other people will find is that doing the best in the moment will come from being very, very clear on what I'm going to call your spiritual aspiration or your true desire. Again, a couple of primary, actually I can think of four primary true desires that are really, really helpful. So whichever one makes your heart sing, or if there's something similar that I don't mention that makes your heart sing, that's what we're talking about. But one true desire is the desire to be truly helpful. This is what got Buddha going. Buddha wanted to end suffering for everyone, wanted to find the end of suffering for everyone. He wanted to be truly helpful. That true desire is what helped him. Another true desire is a desire to know truth. That was a big one for me. I really just wanted to know the difference between what is true and what is not true. Another great desire, all four of these were part of mine at different times, maybe more driving. Another really strong desire that's very, very helpful is the desire to be only love. I mean, come from only love, act from only love, speak from only love, you know, in a very real way. Another really, really helpful desire, believe it or not, is the desire to be perfectly happy. Perfect happiness, right, is a wonderful driving factor. And there may be other driving factors that you're aware of. But if you're really, really focused on this desire, then you'll also have more of a reason to want to pause, pay attention, and pick the highest choice that's available to you now. What causes us to not do that is having other desires. If I have a desire to be loved by other people, to be admired by other people, to feel financially secure, to have a really, really healthy body, some of these other desires, I'm going to often choose the wrong mind, because the wrong mind is going to be promising me answers to those problems. So I'm going to be more attracted to the wrong mind if I'm more attracted to form-based purposes. I'm going to be more attracted to the right mind if I'm more attracted to, I'm going to call it, for I can't think of a good word for it, so I'm going to call it non-selfish purposes. being helpful, being only love, even though being perfectly happy sounds selfish. The truth is, it's one of the greatest things you can do for everyone, so it's not a selfish purpose. Being perfectly happy, wanting to know only truth, things that aren't focused on form, aren't focused on me, me, me. So the way that your attraction happens is by what you are attracted to as a purpose or as a desire. That also is going to determine which code choice you're attracted to when options are provided. Let's go on to the next paragraph. You are to be aware of your individual interpreted code, and you are to measure that code against the idea of your true desire. When the code is aligned with the idea, you re-accept that code into the mind. This feeds into the total code. It affects the overall, and it affects your evolving individual interpretation. So let's just pick any one of those highest purposes. Let's say, well, right now I have a vow, I've taken a vow of happiness. So I guess we could say right now my purpose is to be perfectly happy. That would be a fair statement. I also want to be truly helpful and all of these other things too, but let's pick just one. All right? So my purpose is to be perfectly happy. That is my purpose. I'm decided on that purpose, and I'm decided to be, you know, very, very, not strict. Strict isn't a pleasant word. Disciplined. Maybe some people don't like that word either, but disciplined with that purpose. That's my intention, is to be very disciplined with that purpose, to be perfectly happy. And then something happens, and a thought comes into my mind that I'm being unfairly treated. But I also see that thought. It's a little quieter, not quite as loud, doesn't have any emotion attached to it. But I also see an idea to just choose acceptance. Just accept this. And I remember that my purpose is to be perfectly happy. Well, what this paragraph is saying is I take a moment to look at those two options. I look at the option of being unfairly treated, believing that. And I look at the option of just accepting the circumstance as it is. And I say, which one of these is most helpful to my purpose of being truly happy? And the answer is, accept this situation as is. I'll be much happier if I do that. And so I make that choice. Now you can see how if I had a different purpose, a purpose based on form, it could work in exactly the opposite direction. Let's say my purpose is to feel financially secure. And something happens. I know I have a friend who the other day was charged $250 smoking fee for his hotel room, and he doesn't smoke. And they charged $250, and he called and asked them to, you know, to take that off his bill. He doesn't smoke. It was a mistake. And they didn't believe him. They didn't believe him, and they left it on his bill. Well, let's say that happened to me, right? But my purpose now is to feel financially secure. Well, hell, if I want to feel financially secure and I don't have a lot of money in the bank, $250, man, I'm going to be pissed about that. I'm going to feel unfairly treated. And I'm going to start choosing the lower vibration option. So my purpose is really what's going to be behind my choice. It's not the intellect that's making the choice. You could say it's the heart. Not necessarily the right-minded heart, but the heart. It's where I've put my purpose. Doesn't Jesus say something in the Bible about your treasure, right? If anybody can remember that scripture, go ahead and share it. Something about where your treasure lies. So if my heart is with wanting to be happy, I'm going to choose to accept this. I mean, I called, I asked them to remove the fee. They didn't remove the fee. It doesn't appear that there's anything I can do. All right, I'm just going to accept it because that's going to help me towards my purpose. If my purpose is to feel financially secure, I'm going to be pissed off and feel unfairly treated. Never stay at that hotel again and tell all my friends about it. Two different choices, two different responses, and two different vibrations going back into the code, both which I will individually experience and which is writing the projection of the world. Let's move on to the next paragraph. If the code, as it is received, is not aligned with true desire, it is time to recognize yourself as creator and edit the code. Editing of code is making a change so that the code as it was received is not the idea accepted into the mind as true. In other words, you do not feed the unaligned idea back into the total code of the world. Or said another way, the idea is not shared into the mind that is the sonship. Now, this is speaking to me at a time when I was much more wrong-minded than I am now. Almost always, the first thought, the strongest thought, the loudest thought was a wrong-minded thought. And so it's calling it editing the code by choosing that quiet, right-minded thought that I was barely attracted to and maybe even seemed a little crazy. Now, my experience has changed because of this practice. To be honest, most of the time, right-minded thoughts are very clear. They're just very clear. They're easy to choose. They're easily available for me now. So now I wouldn't necessarily have to edit the code. I just continue to choose that higher vibration that I'm becoming naturally attracted to. But at the time that this was written, that wasn't true. At the time this was written, there was much more the idea to get angry, to feel cheated, to feel rejected, to feel all of these things. And so through the intellectual understanding of this teaching called the code, and through my true desire, which I believe at that time was, I worded it as know thyself, which would be to know truth. I wanted to know truth, right? Through that true desire, even though I have this loud, loud scream to choose a certain perception, because I know I don't want to stay stuck at that low vibration, I know I don't want to stay stuck with this screaming ego all of the time, I go ahead and I look for another option. And whatever option is available that I know is the best right-minded option that I can see, I choose it. This is how you could say I begin to dig myself out of a hole, right? And that's what is being called here editing the code, because it was a natural part of my hardwire at that time to be wrong-minded. And what I'm doing is literally choosing right-minded choices so that that natural wrong-mindedness will begin to fade and be replaced with a natural right-mindedness so that it's no longer a struggle. But in the beginning, it was a struggle, and it did take effort. And that's why this message came, to be helpful to me. This understanding was helpful to me in making those changes within the mind, even though it wasn't easy to make those changes within the mind. Going on to the next paragraph. To not reshare an idea, you must recognize your power. So here he's talking about not resharing these negative, wrong-minded, loud choices that I saw at that time. Don't reshare that hate thought. Don't reshare that victim thought. And by the way, I reshare it is simply by believing it, right? To not reshare an idea, you must recognize your power. You must step into your power and choose to be the role of source or creator instead of playing victim to your thoughts. Accepting that code comes to you through your previous interpretation is accepting responsibility for the code. This acceptance may seem easy or strained. You may accept the idea of creator with joy or with great resistance. The time it seems to take to accept responsibility for the code will vary based on your basic reaction. Do not judge yourself for the ease or challenge of accepting responsibility for the code. Rest, relax, be patient. Accepting responsibility is key. So no matter how long the time is very well spent. So again, what he's saying is if my mind is filled with hate thoughts or my mind is filled with anxiety, it's because of how many times I've believed hate thoughts or believed anxiety before. That's why that's so strong in me, And the way it's going to become weak in me is for me to start making different choices. But I need to accept that I have to make those different choices. And a part of accepting that I have to make those different choices is accepting that my current mental environment has come from past choices that I've made. I have to accept that this comes from me. I have to accept that responsibility. And what this paragraph says is some people will embrace that, but there are people who will not embrace that, who may take a very, very long time in accepting that responsibility. And until that responsibility is accepted, there's probably not going to be a lot of right-minded choosing going on. That seems to come from accepting the responsibility. So there's going to be a stain in the wrong mind, longer. But what this is saying is don't judge yourself for that. If you seem to not be able to accept responsibility, if you seem to have a strong resistance to this, if your mind just keeps telling you this teaching is bull crap, this is not necessary, blah, 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 don't judge that. What's this teaching you to do? This is teaching you to choose your highest possible choice. It's actually teaching you to raise your vibration level, even while you're still resisting the whole idea of the teaching, right? Just accept that you can't accept this. Yeah, right? It's wonderful. It's beautiful. It's brilliant. Moving on to the next paragraph. Accepting. Oh, I see Diedrich has his hand up. All right. You know what I'm going to do? Oops, Diedrich put his hand back down. I don't know if he wants the mic. What victim? Oh, Diedrich, I'm just doing a teaching called The Code. And I don't even remember what I said about victim now, so I can't answer your question. I can't even answer the question because I don't have that much of a recollection of what I said. I apologize. But let me go on to the next paragraph. Accepting responsibility for the code and accepting or allowing your reaction to it is different than reaccepting the code into the mind. When you step into your power as creator and choose to accept responsibility, including choosing to accept the effects of the code as you previously interpret it, you're also choosing not to reaccept the code. If you were reaccepting the same code into the mind, you would not be pausing to see that that line of code need not be. You would not recognize your power. You would not be aware that there is another way to see. So whenever you pause to look at the code, you are changing the code by shifting to another vibrational level. We often tend to be very, very hard on ourselves. We have some ideal of perfection of how we're supposed to be doing all of this. And when we don't meet that ideal in our mind, we then judge ourselves harshly. What this is saying is even if you, in your own perspective, appear to be failing, you know, like, you're pausing, you're looking at the code, you realize that's a hate thought or you realize that's a victim thought, right? And you think, I'm not going to do this, I'm not going to follow this. And then something like blows up and you do anyway. It's saying, you know what, it may look like it's the same as before because you still believe that thought and you still reacted like you always did before, but it's not the same as before. Because now you're at least pausing and looking, and you didn't used to do that. You can remember a time when you didn't pause and look. And it's saying, this is already a change, and this is already raising the vibrational level. Pretty soon, you're going to find higher and higher choices available in your mind, and you're going to find yourself able to choose those. And I can tell you, this is exactly how I experienced a major change in this personality. I used to be a very angry mother, a very angry mother. I spent a lot of time screaming at Jasmine. And when I say screaming, I mean screaming. And at some point, of course, as I began this spiritual path, that's one of the first things I wanted to let go of, was being this hateful, cruel mother that I was. And that's how I saw myself. So I wanted to let go of that. So I had a desire to let go of being this hateful, cruel, screaming mother. And I would see the rage building up in me. I would see it, and I would say, I'm not going to do it, I'm not going to do it. And then she'd say or do one more thing, and then, it came out. It came out anyway. Well, just like Spirit is saying here, that was a change, though. The fact that I was looking at it, before I used to just scream and not look at it, that was a change. And what began to happen after that was I began to feel very, very guilty afterwards. But then the highest choice that I had, and this is what I did, the highest choice that I had was to, I used to tell Jasmine, I'm putting Mama on a timeout. And I would go to my room and close the door and I would look at my guilt. I would be with my guilt. I would rest with my guilt. I would trust that it wasn't true. I would trust that the Holy Spirit's interpretation of me was more true than mine. And I'm really suffering the whole time because I feel so guilty. But I'm trusting that I'm wrong, that I'm innocent no matter what. And that was my highest choice. And then, you know, after some period of time, a higher choice became available. I began to see the thoughts. There was one thought in particular, see the thought that was causing the rage. Before, I didn't see that thought, so I couldn't choose not to listen to it. You can't choose not to listen to a thought you don't see. But as I was making my highest choice available, which was, you know, just being with the guilt and trusting I was wrong, that I was guilty, right, I began to see that thought. And then I began to not choose that idea in the mind. And as I began to not choose that idea in the mind, that's when the anger started dying down. So it seemed to be a process. It seemed to be a process that occurred over a few years. But if you look at it in the light of the code, it was doing the best that I could at one moment, and then another best became available, and then doing that, and then another best became available. And now, I mean, it's really been years since I've gotten angry and screamed at my daughter. You know, it just doesn't happen anymore, right? So now it's not something that happens. But that's through this process of the code. And it started where it started. You can't start in a place other than the place that you're at. You can't start with a choice other than the choice that's available to you. So you start where you are, and then you trust that as you do the best that you can right where you're at, it might simply be having compassion for yourself, not being so damn harsh on yourself all the time. Higher and higher choices become available. All right, so let's see, we have a few minutes left. I'm going to go ahead and read the last two paragraphs together. It is true that this is not a true edit of the code. And the reason it's not a true edit is because the choice was available as part of the code. So you aren't really editing the code, right? You're just making the highest choice that's given. It is true that this is not a true edit of the code. The symbol of editing is useful, but at the level of individual, that power does not exist. Remember, the total layered code comes from the totality. So by choosing another way to see, you are choosing to shift vibrationally to another layer of the same basic code. Every option that's available to you is already written. You aren't creating anything new. Oh, that's the next sentence. That was me being commentary, but it's the next sentence. Every option is already written. But the option you choose affects the overall writing of every layer of code. So again, as you make your highest choice, that's going to lead to higher and higher choices in the code, right? So, you know, the best thing that you can do, not only for yourself, but for the whole, is to always make the highest vibration or the most right-minded choice that you can. Experience is different than reality. Okay, I remember I told you when I started teaching this, that this is a relative truth, not an absolute truth. Okay, experience is different than reality. And to try to reconcile the two through intellect is an impossibility. But reality, what you are, is what it means by reality, and its effect on experience is understood through non-intellect. It cannot be put into words, but it can be seen, and it can be seen clearly. Still, when it is seen from the perspective that isn't totality, since individual interpretation always applies. Individual interpretation is your freedom, and your freedom combined with the totality of all creates the unlimited potential that is God. So absolute truth is that we're unaffected by anything. That's absolute truth. Relative truth is that this experience of being human can be filled with suffering, or it can be a happy, loving experience, right? And as you raise yourself up, or you allow yourself to be raised up through your choices to the happy, loving experience, that actually affects the whole. So the most helpful thing you can do, both for yourself and others, is making this choice. Relative truth, not absolute truth, because in the absolute way, the self is not affected by any of this. But it does seem that until we fully realize absolute truth, practicing relative truth has a place. I do see Lynn saying, do you see a mic? Can you guys hear me, by the way, or was I talking to no one? Yes, okay, good. I'm glad you can hear me. At least David can. All right, so that was the teaching of the code in an hour. I don't know if I've ever taught the code in an hour. Oh, Diedrich is having trouble. Okay. I don't know if I've ever taught the code in an hour, so that was a bit of a miracle itself, and I felt like it was a very thorough teaching. I may have to call him. Where is he? We'll find out what happens. What I'm going to do is play a song. I'm going to play a song, and then you guys can fill me in. If Diedrich can't get in, I'll need to know where he's at. I think he might be in Costa Rica. He can't hear. Okay, well then if I have to call him, I'll have to call him. Right now, let me play a song, and then we'll transition over to the next hour, which is the member meeting. Lots of people here for a Super Bowl Sunday. That's magnificent. Here's a song we're going to play. It's called Rocky Mountain High. It fits with where I am right now in beautiful Colorado. Snow everywhere, and on my walk today, I saw a bald eagle fly right over my head. It was gorgeous. That's a part of the song, but also it fits with our member meeting today because we're going to be talking about the Rocky Mountain Choose Again Retreat. So let's take a little bit of a break and then transition to our next meeting.
He was born in the summer of his 27th year, coming home to a place he'd never been before. He left yesterday behind him. You might say he was born again. You might say he found the key for every door. When he first came to the mountains, his life was far away. On the road, hanging by a song. But the string's already broken, and he doesn't really care. It keeps changing fast, and it don't last for long. But the Colorado Rocky Mountain High, I've seen it rain and fire in the sky. Shadow from the starlight is softer than a lullaby. Rocky Mountain High, Colorado. Rocky Mountain High, Colorado. He climbed the Fever Mountain. He saw silver clouds below. He saw everything far as you can see. And they say that he got crazy once, and he tried to touch the sun, and he lost a friend but kept a memory. Now he walks in quiet solitude, the forests and the streams, seeking grace in every step he takes. His side has turned inside himself to try and understand the serenity of a clear blue mountain lake. And the Colorado Rocky Mountain High, I've Rocky Mountain High.
Colorado,
Rocky Mountain High.
Colorado.
Now his life is full of wonder, but his heart still knows some fear of a simple thing he cannot comprehend. Why they try to tear the mountains down to bring in a couple more people, more scars upon the land. The Colorado Rocky Mountain High, I've seen it rain and fire in the sky. Though he'd be poor man if he never saw an eagle fly. Rocky Mountain High,
his link.